Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports, 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa, along with my buddy Scott Marr. Scott, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you, Frank?
You know, I played some golf this week, so I'm doing all right.
No. That's always a good week when you can do that. I have to say I'm excited because this Sunday is my first round of competitive golf. I feel like I'm on the PGA Tour. I'm playing in this competitive golf league starting on Sunday morning. So I'm looking forward to seeing how I can fare with the other golfers in the Sacramento area. And I'm guessing it won't be well, but I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, I think as long as you have your smile on your face, you'll be fine. And quite frankly, the fact that you've got a 7:08 tee time or something like that, you know, you're a stronger man than I.
My face may be smiling, but it'll be freezing. And then we'll see after 18 if I've still got a smile or not.
A lot of fun seeing Tiger Woods playing again, huh?
Oh, that's awesome. What he did on Thursday was absolutely amazing, finishing those three holes with birdie, birdie, birdie. And to watch him play with McIlroy and Thomas for the first two rounds, absolutely awesome.
That certainly is a marquee group, and one that he probably was comfortable playing in as well.
No doubt.
When you come back from everything he's been through, it's just it's a story that you know, someday the movie will be as exciting as his life, I'm guessing.
Be hard to have a movie any more exciting.
Yeah. On the show today, Allison Burns from the USGA. She is the champions director for the Outside the Ropes for the U.S. Women's Open coming up in July here at Pebble Beach. And when you think about a tournament like that, it's hard to imagine the planning that goes into it or all of the things that someone like this particular person has to be responsible for a tournament like that. So we're going to find out a little bit about that.
Yeah, I can't wait. This U.S. Open is going to be so great at Pebble Beach this summer.
First time for Women's Open coming to Pebble Beach in its 78th year. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, hard to believe, but boy, what an event it will be.
Tom Morton, PGA Director of Player Development at Hagen Oaks. Every time Tom's on the show, I learn something. Tom is you know, one of the premier instructors, certainly in Northern California, with a footprint across the United States. So it's always fun to ask him a couple of questions and in the process, maybe learn something about our own games as well.
Well, we'll definitely learn something. We may not like what we learn from what Tom has to say about our games, but we'll learn something. All right.
Meredith Lobeck, PGA and LPGA Director of Instruction at Granite Bay, will wrap things up with us. Meredith is an old friend. You know, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of friends in the ranks of the PGA and LPGA, and I've known Meredith for a number of years. She is the, as I said, Director of Instruction at Granite Bay, and just received a feature in the latest edition of the PGA magazine for her work with juniors. So we're going to learn a little bit about how you should start your kids and at what age and things like that.
Yeah, Mayor, this is awesome and a real treasure in our area. We're so lucky to have so many great PGA instructors here in our Northern California area.
I think because we're here all the time, we forget what an incredible hotbed golf is in Northern California, and especially in the Sacramento area. So we'll learn a little bit more about that as well.
Can't wait.
Golf to Go Radio Hour. We'll be back with more right after this here on Sactown Sports 1140.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh, and we'd like to welcome in Allison Burns. Allison is a championship director with the USGA Inside the Ropes. We're going to find out what that means, but Allison has a huge role in the upcoming United States Women's Open coming to Pebble Beach in July. And Allison, welcome to the show and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to talk to you all today.
You know, it seems like it's right around the corner, you know, coming up. You know, here we are almost in March, and July will be here in a heartbeat. But this has been going on for a while. This isn't something, you know, you decided a couple of weeks ago, we're going to have this tournament. There's a huge amount of time that goes into planning and preparing for a tournament such as this. Can you kind of give us a little bit of that background?
Absolutely. I think to your point, it is getting close. We have the ticker in our office. I think we're at 135 days or something like that the last time I checked. But we start planning a Women's Open 3 years out. So we start with our corporate hospitality sales, where our parking lots will be. Just some of the event logistics is our first step, and having a lot of communication with the host club, in this instance, Pebble Beach. And then we have a full-time team that moves to the location of our championship. So we have a staff of three that has been living in Monterey for 2 years now. I'm working day in and day out just on this specific Women's Open. And then people like myself and others are support staff located at our headquarters in Pinehurst in New Jersey. And we just build this entourage of people to work just on the Women's Open specifically. So there's a lot of ins and outs, and there's a lot of people always thinking about the specific year and what comes next. So as it's getting close, we're actually excited because we're just getting down to the details now. We have the plan. We've had the plan in place for a while, and we're just executing at this point.
So 3 years out is the planning. How many years before that do you actually decide, why don't we go to Pebble Beach? I mean, this is the 78th time and or version of the Open, and first time at Pebble Beach, if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
That's correct. So several years, we work on our host club contracts and where we will have a Women's Open. It's different for each club, but we already laid out, I think, the next 10 years, if I'm correct, for the Women's Open. So we're thinking about our future sites way in advance, and some of those planning aspects start happening 5 to 6 years out because you're starting to create where that timeline of the Women's Open will be played.
You know, we sit and watch it on television and enjoy it and never have a thought about all of this effort that goes into it. What constitutes a venue that is worthy of the U.S. Women's Open?
I think it's world class. And Pebble Beach is an example. Lancaster, Pennsylvania for 24. We were just at Pine Needles. We're about to go to Riviera, Erin Hills. I mean, we're going to the cathedrals of the game. I think something else that we recently did this past year is announce our Women's Open going to Men's Open, U.S. Open sites for the first time. So in 2025, Erin Hills will host a Women's Open for the first time. We're going to go back to Oakmont in 26. So it is the name of the best courses in the world. That's where we like to go, and that's where we want to host the most prestigious championship in women's golf.
We're talking with Alison Burns from the USGA. She's championship director. Inside the ropes, what does that mean, Alison? And what are the kinds of things you have to worry about between now and July?
Yeah, so actually I'm outside the ropes, and there is another person, Shannon Woolyard, that is inside the ropes, but I can explain both. So she oversees our course setup, our rules of golf, everything. And what we refer to with the ropes is where that intersection between fans watching a championship and our players playing the championship. So I oversee everything outside the ropes, which is fan facing. So our parking locations, our volunteer program, which is over 1,400 volunteers each year, our concession stand locations, our community engagement, just really getting the whole town supporting the championship and everything that comes with it to have fans come and enjoy it.
Speaking of volunteers, is there still opportunity for people to be involved to help, or are you pretty much set there?
So we are at a wait list, thankfully, but if you are interested, please go put your name on the list. It's all on US Women's Open. com, but thankfully we went to a wait list within a month of launching our volunteer program, which was about a year and a half ago. So the community really swarmed behind us instantly, which is a great start. And that always helps us when you have a great volunteer base to then flow into ticket sales and then who will be on site later for the actual championship week. So we have a great turnout so far.
Interesting thought that just occurred to me. What percentage of your volunteers are with you every year? They'll travel no matter where.
Oh, yes.
I imagine it's pretty big.
It's pretty big. I would say it's around 20% that really they peg that week every single year to be at the Women's Open. It's their vacation of the year. Certain committees, they want to be on the committee they always are on each year, whether they're being a marshal or working in the merchandise tent. They just love supporting the championship. And so it's great to have that group of us following each year.
Scott, I know you and I have talked about this before, and we're both really excited to have the U.S. Women's Open coming. What particular are you looking forward to?
Oh, my goodness. Well, one, it's Pebble Beach, so it's absolutely amazing. And, of course, we were lucky because the U.S. Open was at Olympic Club as well so recently, another great venue. I got to think for you, first of all, I'm shocked to hear it's the first time at Pebble Beach. That kind of blows me away, just considering how many great championships have been there. But in terms of them hosting so many other great events year on year out, it's got to be an ideal location for you, obviously, working outside the ropes. There's so many things to bring people in for this event.
Absolutely. It's a perfect location to visit. I love having the excuse to go out there and have a planning trip because there's so many other things to do. There's great restaurants, there is great golf to play, and then you're watching a championship. So it's a vacation spot. It's a destination. So you can go attend the Women's Open, but you can also have a family trip while you're out there or a golf trip. And that really will make the week special. And having the championship just in the Pacific Northwest for the second time within 5 years, and knowing you mentioned Olympic Club in 21, unfortunately, was during COVID and we had limited fans. I'm excited to really see what the turnout will be in that area and bringing it back.
No question. I'm curious in terms of sponsorships, how many of your sponsors are your national ones that are just with you for every tournament, and how much are you getting from a local basis each year?
Yeah, so we, from our larger partnership standpoint, they're all behind us with our typical activations. For example, Cisco leads all of our Wi-Fi efforts for the championship, and that's how you can log on to the app and track your players and the scoring while you're in your grandstand. We will have some of our other partners involved with some fan activations closer to time. We can release what those will really look like. But from a corporate hospitality standpoint locally, like I mentioned, we went on sale about 3 years ago and we've seen some great support so far. We're still selling. So if anyone is interested in that private hospitality or even a shared table hospitality, there are options still available, but we have been very appreciative of the support of the community thus far, as well as just the surrounding towns and cities there.
And would people just go to usga.com for that as well? Or
if they just go directly to uswomensopen.com, it's all right there on the landing page.
Okay. And how about in terms of ticket sales? Right now, people are interested in getting tickets.
Yeah, same for that. We're running a good two-pack deal right now. So if you and a friend want to come out to the Women's Open, there's a great deal running. I believe it's about $130 to pick a day, whatever day you want to come out and play. You don't have or to watch. You don't have to decide if it's Friday or Saturday yet. You can just show up and attend. And then we have gallery weekly passes starting at $175. And then we've already sold out of our premium upgraded ticket, which was Lodge Premier, which we're very, very excited to have that sell out already. But please buy your tickets now and get to the championship and have them ready when it comes in July.
How many people are you hoping to have over the course of the week there?
Yeah, so we'll expect anywhere from 30 to 50,000 for the week. We do not open to the public until Wednesday, which is the last day of practice rounds for the players. It's one of my favorite days, though, because I do think the players really engage with the fans. They sign autographs. So they're just looking forward to the next day of championship play. And then Thursday through Sunday is obviously the competition rounds.
Allison, obviously you've been with the USGA for a while and attended a number of these of these Opens and other USGA events. What is it about an Open that, you know, that the mood is totally different than a regular tour event, and everything kind of gets hyped up and moves up a notch or two? What is it about the Open that is so special?
I mean, it's the number one that they want to win. You know that if you talk to any player on tour, it's even different than I think the men's tour, where there's multiple majors that hold a different significance for each player. For the women, it truly is the U.S. Women's Open. And without question, it's the highest purse. It's the next level. It's the highest place on stage. We have the largest number of broadcast hours. We make it special for our players. And then on top of it, it's the courses that we're playing this championship at. But even being on this side from a working function, it is so special each year. Like, it doesn't change. You have that feeling when you get to the week that this is something great, and it's important, and it means so much to these players, whether it's the first time for them getting in as an amateur or it's their 10th time playing as a veteran player. And I think that's really what makes it different.
Who can we expect to see?
Well, we'll have obviously our past champion, Minji Lee, is excited to come back and defend her title. Michelle Wee West will be there as well. She's looking forward to it. Nelly Korda has been playing well recently. She'll be there. So all of those top players, Lexi Thompson, we're looking forward to seeing who's going to win for the first time at Pebble Beach.
You know, in some of the past Opens, there's always been one or two players that, you know, you maybe not haven't even heard of, especially if you're not following the women's game. And that certainly brings a different level of excitement to the competition as well.
For sure. And I think we just released qualifying sites yesterday, and that's always really fun to just watch and track who makes it through, whether it's your local states qualifying or just tracking someone that may have lost a tour card and is trying to get back. But that'll all start in May. And I do encourage everyone to try to watch and see how everyone's doing. And then you have someone to follow once you're there watching, or if you're just watching the broadcast. Having that qualifying really makes the Women's Open also different, because we're accepting so many different amateur players, and anyone truly can play in this championship.
How long have you been with the USGA, and are you a player? Have you know, is golf your game? But tell me a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I've been with the USGA for about 8 years now, and I grew up playing golf. My dad's a teaching pro. I played through college and knew I was never gonna go professional, but I wanted to have my career be in golf and in the game I love. And so I've been lucky to do that every year. As soon as I graduated grad school, I got a position at the USGA, and I've been on our championships team ever since. So being on the Women's Open side is really special to me too, because I have gotten to see some of my friends that I grew up playing golf play in the U.S. Women's Open. So being on the other side and helping put it together and see some of those friends make it through has been really fun.
Tell us just a little bit about the USGA and why it's an important organization and you know, in the entire world of golf, and what it does to support the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's the governing body of golf in coordination with the RNA and the championships that we host. So over 14 national championships, that's really one of the core pieces of our business, the Women's Open just being one of those. But I think we're very proud of all of our amateur events, the U.S. Adaptive Open that just started last year. We really are the beginning. We trademark the game of golf, and we make sure that it stays true to itself. And that's really important to us. And that's important working for the USGA. I appreciate that about our company. And for the good of the game, I think that's our slogan, and it's very true. I think we stay to those core values, and we do a lot of research, whether it's in the green section, agronomy, equipment standards, just all of those different aspects of our business create the wholeness of golf and conserving the game.
Allison Burns is the Outside the Ropes Championship Director for the USGA and the United States Women's Open coming up in July at Pebble Beach. Allison, can't thank you enough for being with us. You've been a wealth of information, and look forward to maybe talking to you again down the line.
Sounds great. Thanks
now,
for having
Allison,
me.
Frank forgot one question. And like, I want to know how come Frank and I weren't selected for the 3-year planning committee for the job at Carmel in Monterey for this tournament.
I didn't know you guys yet. Next time around. Exactly.
Allison Burns, thanks so much for being with us. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Scott Moore sitting beside. I'm Frank LaRosa, welcoming in Mr. Tom Morton, PGA Player Development Director at Hagen Oaks. And Tom is a regular on the show, and every time he's with us, I learn something. Tom, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
You know, every player on tour has their pluses and minuses. I mean, some are known as great putters. Some are known as great drivers of the ball. Some have an incredible short game. Some it's iron play. As we've talked about instruction before, we kind of focus on the drive and the short game around the green. But I know for me, my weakness in my game is in that second shot. It's whether it's a long iron or in some cases a fairway wood even, but I find myself wanting to help the ball. I find myself wanting to swing harder. And obviously that just gets me in trouble, as you would know better than most. So how should we approach that second shot? I played with someone last week that into a par five was hitting a 7-iron. So, you know, so his version of a second shot is a whole lot different than mine. But how should we approach that second shot and kind of level that out so that, you know, the approach shot, we're able to hit some greens?
Yeah, so it certainly is different for everyone, right? I mean, if we're looking at the elite players that play on the weekends on TV, you know, they're hitting, for the most part, a lot of, you know, short irons, mid irons into greens, and those are really scoring shots. And, you know, their expectation is to, you know, get those inside, you know, 20, 25 feet most of the time, and to give themselves a chance to make a lot of pars and some birdies. Well, you know, us average golfers, you know, a lot of times if we're having, you know, 5-irons or, you know, hybrids or fairway woods or different stuff like that into our, you know, second shot, a lot of times those, I mean, those are not necessarily scoring shots. Now, what the important part is there is for the golfer to understand what they're attempting to set up by that next play, right? You know, be really mindful of, you know, maybe hitting it on the green is the, you know, something that's the absolute best they could possibly do. So then if that's the case, is it, you know, missing a little short right or setting up what the next play is going to be is super important, so they can have a chance to then chip it up and you know, make a par or worst case make bogeys. You know, if the average golfer really played the game thinking about how do I maneuver myself around the golf course to at worst case make a bogey, you know, they're going to sprinkle in a par here or there. And next thing you know, they're breaking 90. And most golfers, that's a huge win, right? So, you know, it's really about thinking your way through it, even more so than even the technique of doing it.
I think that's really fascinating to think about what this shot is going to do and where is it going to leave me and where do I want to be? And as you say, kind of play yourself around the course. That's, How do we learn how to do that? How do we go from I just want to hit this as far as I can and get as close as I can to I want to hit it to the left side because I know there's less trouble over there and it's an easier approach to the green?
I think one, it's stepping back and us being realistic. And I know I had this experience recently with my son as a freshman in high school, and he's has been not playing a lot of golf lately. For the past quite a few months because he's been playing another sport. And before a golf tryout, I walked around with him for a couple 9 holes while he was playing. And that was the thing. Okay, let's go around here and let's play for a bogey. And if we can make a few pars, great. And that really changed his mindset. And it was fascinating to see what happened. And he ended up shooting kind of low 40s and, you know, making a team. And it was really fun to see that, you know, he got less frustrated because if he made a bogey or hit a poor shot, he's thought to himself, well, I can still pitch this on the green and two putt and make my bogey. I'm still in good shape. And so it's really a mindset thing, and you don't have to hit phenomenal shots to do that. It really is about, you know, hopefully hitting a tee shot that puts you in a place to, you know, play the next shot from. But even if you hit one in the trees and you have to punch out, that's where we step back and go, okay, where can I play this to give myself the best chance to knock it up onto the green or right next to the green to get up and down to make the bogey? You know, it's all too often people thinking that if they're not making pars, they're not playing well. Well, that's not realistic for the average golfer. So like I said, it really starts with the mindset of that bogeys are okay.
You know, we were talking with Jared Butts last week and asked him if he could change one thing about the game of golf, what would it be? And he said he would get rid of the pars. He would get rid of the numbers for a par on each of the holes, because as you just said, it sets up some expectations that many of us maybe can't fulfill.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great way to say it. And I know, you know, Jared and his team up there are really into getting golfers on the golf course and going through this. And, you know, that's a big thing. Golfers really, you know, the range and the practice area, although important to work on your technique and some things, that isn't golf, right? Golf is weird in that our practice areas don't look much like anything like the golf course in some cases. And so how are we connecting those dots, and how are we making sure that we are, you know, filling all the buckets I think we've talked about before, kind of the mind, body, swing, strategy, equipment, and kind of, you know, our personal stuff we go through on the golf course. How do we fill all those up without getting on the golf course where you can't? So I think getting out there with a coach and an instructor and talking through the game plan for themselves is really important.
Scott, I don't know if you picked up on it a little while ago, but Tom Morton, who has played in a PGA Tour event, the Barracuda Championship, referred to us, he said, as average golfers like us. And I sort of took that to mean, you know, the three of us, and I'm guessing that's not what he meant.
He definitely didn't mean to include himself with us. I know that for sure.
Oh, well, I'm very much an average golfer.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that event was so terrific, but, you know, I found most funny when I got back is, you know, the customers certainly view, you know, folks like myself or other golf professionals as, you know, really, really good golfers. And yeah, in the grand scope of things, that might be the case, but, you know, if you compare myself to the people who play in the PGA Tour, as I got to see, I'm a very average golfer compared to what they do. And it's a whole nother level. It was pretty awesome.
Well, it's all relative, but you would be Einstein in this group of three right here. So, but I think the point you make about being able to walk out with a coach and really game planning is something that is so valuable. Most people don't really have the opportunity to do that, but I think that should really be part of any sort of golf lessons that somebody gets, because truthfully, it's really hard to know how to manage an 18 hole course and how to set up. And, you know, if you're not playing a course a lot and you don't know it well, it's even much harder to do that. And I think that's a skill set, just like learning how to hit your driver or any other club.
No doubt. And I think an experience that really helped me with this was after my 4 years of college eligibility were up, I had one more quarter of school left, and I helped assist with the golf team at UC Santa Barbara. And so as a coach, you really see things from kind of backwards, because you're going around the course, you're seeing things from sort of green back to the tee. Or as the golfer, obviously, you're seeing it from tee to green. And it is a really great experience seeing it that way, because you see, you sort of reverse it and go, okay, well, if I'm at the green, where do I need to come from, and so on and so forth back to the tee. And I would say to golfers that it's a good way to look at a golf course. You know, and most golfers play in the same 2 to 3 golf courses pretty regularly, especially if you're a member of a club. And so kind of taking those courses and doing that and going backwards and is a really good thing to do. And to go, well, I need to play it here and play it here. And if I leave it here, that gives me the best chance for the next play. And it's, you know, golf is really, you hear all the time, and it's cliche, but it's very true. It's a one at a time thing. And so your score is just made up of each and every one of those ones. And you have to think about where you want to put each one to
good question. Give yourself and it's as nuanced as knowing where the pin position is, which will change on a daily basis too, because you're not going to want to play the same hole the same way based upon where that pin might be placed.
Yeah, there's some truth to that for sure, but at the same time, the average golfer, you know, should not be aiming at the flag. The flag should, you know, on their approach shots into the green, whether it's their second or third shot, the flag stick should never be their target, to be honest. You know, if they're hitting a, you know, for chipping or putting, obviously it's a different story, but other than that, they should be aiming away from the hole and playing more to the middle or more outside of the green, again, to give themselves the best chance, because oftentimes that golfer is, you know, if the flag's on the left side and they're aiming at the hole, that gives them very little room on the left, and then they might short side themselves, and now double or more comes into play. So, you know, it's, if the average golfer literally would just play the course the same way most every time and aim to the middle of the green, yeah, they're going
to
play.
It might apply more to that shot before the approach shot too, which Frank is talking about as well. And like with Frank, because you know Frank and I played golf a lot, in certain cases you might even be just better off playing a smaller club. If you don't hit your fairway wood great, well, just hit a mid iron and you can get to the hole just as well.
There's no doubt. And, you know, when someone's on the golf course, it's okay to play to your strength. You know, if you're weak from 80 yards, stop hitting it to 80 yards during the round right now. Maybe you got to go work on it and get better from that yardage, yes. But if you're really good from, you know, 120 yards rather than 80 yards, then hit it to that point. And, you know, if it's about putting the ball in the hole, then certainly while you're on the golf course, play where you're more confident and play to your strengths.
And that's that notion of working backwards from the green again. You get to your perfect layup spot and hit the shots that will get you to that, especially on a par five where you have some choices. You know, what are the clubs that are going to get you to that 120 yards, say, and give you the best opportunity to hit the middle of the green. I think that's, again, sort of a brilliant thought, you know, to always aim for the middle of the green. I think that, again, we maybe put too much pressure on ourselves in the middle of the fairway, especially, as you say, if the flag is cut close to the edge of the green, you don't give yourself room to miss if you pull it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and I see this even with, you know, pretty darn good golfers. And, you know, right now I'm helping with a high school golf team, and, you know, there's a lot of good players on the team. And when we're out there watching them play golf, it still shocks me. You know, it's like, let's say that their 7-iron on average goes 165 to 70 yards. But then when they really hit it solid, it's 175 yards. Well, they always like pull it out when it's 175. Well, that's like the one in the 20 that you hit. It's like we don't play to the averages for the most part. And the golfers need to understand that is, you know, it's not about your very, very, very best shot is what you should be thinking about. It's what do we do on average? And if you really think about that and manage your game around those expectations and, you know, both how far the ball goes and where your ball tends to go and, you know, aiming accordingly and so on and so forth, you will have fewer strokes when you play.
Always, always great things that you bring to the show, Tom. So based on what we've talked about today, how do we incorporate this into our practice and kind of get our mindset to doing what we're talked about today?
Yeah, instead of kind of mindlessly, you know, hitting balls in the driving range, it is about kind of managing your ball flight and what your tendencies are. And with things like, you know, the top tracer that we're fortunate to have here at Hagen Oaks, get on there and get your distances and, you know, find the average, you know, go hit 10 seven irons and average out what is normal, not what the very best one was, but what is normal. And there's some great things on there you can do to, you know, play golf courses and compete with yourself and even others that are using the system. And, you know, that's a great way to do it on the range, but also get on the golf course more. And when you go play, sometimes don't make it about the score, but go play and, okay, I'm going to be all about managing my game today and work on that as a skill set. You can practice on the golf course. So it's super important.
Tom Morton, PGA Director of Instruction at the Hagen Oaks Golf Complex. Tom, it's always a pleasure. And I always walk away learning something and frustrated that I didn't know it before. So thanks very much for being with us on the Golf to Go Radio Hour.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
We will be back with more right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Meredith Lobeck, a PGA and LPGA professional, director of instruction at Granite Bay, and an old friend of mine, is going to join us to talk about her successes working with juniors and adults as well. And as a matter of fact, you were just kind of featured in a PGA magazine. Tell us about that. Welcome, Meredith. How are you?
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely.
It was a great honor to be featured in the PGA magazine. And I truly love what I do, so I'm excited about it. And hopefully we can grow this game around the world.
You know, you were featured for your work with juniors. One of the things that the PGA magazine will do is to pick out various programs throughout the country that PGA professionals and members are having success with. And if I'm not mistaken, that's why you were featured, because of the success of your junior program.
Yes, that is true. I work at Granite Bay Golf Club. It's part of the Invited Network, and we've launched Crush It, which is fantastic. But, you know, my successes are more than just that program. I've worked with U.S. Kids and Operation 36. And in all honesty, having all those platforms has really helped me grow my program. And I'm all about learning and learning new things and learning new ways. But, you know, making a program fun to me is the number one thing. And that's where most of my success comes from.
So when you mention all the different platforms that you have available to you, do you blend those, or is there a course that goes through a particular platform?
You know, each one has their own take, but they're all very similar. And I think the biggest thing is getting the kids on the course and starting from a shorter yardage and working their way back and measuring their skills. So I started at 3 years old with my programming. We don't necessarily let them play from the back tees. We bring them nice up and close so they can feel what it's like to get a par and birdie and eagle and learn all the different things. And that's, you know, parents bring their kids out on the course all the time and want them to succeed. Well, they can do that if they give them the appropriate yardage to play from. And then I have weekly classes that really, in a fun way, show them all those different skills.
So at 3 years old, are they practicing with regular golf equipment? Certainly cut for their size, but is it with regular golf balls? Or are we doing plastic at that point? Or how do we get a start?
Those three-year-olds are using regular golf balls and U.S. Kids clubs, and
wow,
they get that ball in the air, and it's more play-focused, really. So we throw a lot of balls, and we don't hit the golf ball with a club every time, but they all have real clubs, and they all get the ball in the hole, and they all cheer and roll on the ground and sing and dance, and we just have fun with it.
Well, I don't think I've ever known you not to be smiling, so I'm sure that's infectious with the kids as well. So you mentioned earlier that you're at Granite Bay, and I did as well. And people would expect, well, I can't get involved in her programs because I'm not a member. Dispel that rumor for us.
Well, we do ask. We do have non-members come in. They do pay a little bit more, but it really shows them our club and what our values are. And it gets them the experience to come out and see Granite Bay. We just went through a huge renovation, and our golf course is amazing. Our practice facility has improved. It's awesome. So non-members may come out and try out our facility while in class. No other times. But if they sign up for the class, they're able to see it. Parents are able to watch, and we have a truly special place.
Scott, I guess that's how we get to play Granite Bay. We have to sign up for one of Meredith's classes.
Hey, I'm willing to do that. Sounds like it'd be a good thing for my game for sure. But I can attest that the new facility is awesome out there, and the course looks amazing too. I haven't had a chance to play it since the renovation, but I can't wait to get out there at some point, Meredith.
Well, let's go. I'll be happy to take you out. We're going to start from 25 yards, okay?
Fantastic. That's
hey,
the worst
we'll make
part
a
of my
couple
game.
Of pars.
That's right.
Meredith, tell us a little bit about your background and why you're so excited about where you are now.
Well, I started as a young kid at 7 years old, right across the street from Blackberry Farm Golf Course in the Bay Area. And funny story, I went to summer camp at Hagen Oaks with Kenny and Tom Morton.
Oh, wow.
Ken Sr. I stayed in the dorms at Sac State, and that was a pivotal year for me. I was the only girl in the overnight camp. It was great. So I got to know the Mortons really well. Went on to play college golf at the University of Kentucky, and then started my journey with the LPGA at Palo Alto Municipal Course, which is now Baylands, with Brad Lazaris, and he took me under his wing and showed me the ins and outs. And I really started out as a merchandise manager. I got involved in that and joined the LPGA in 1994. I'm aging myself. Turned 30 and moved back east to Virginia. I spent 19 years in Virginia and had a great time, but I missed home. So that's what got me back here to the Sacramento area, and worked at Hagen. Then I went on to Wood Creek and Diamond Oaks and worked with Rob Frederick. And then I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to go to Granite Bay. And I've been at Granite Bay. April will be my fifth season.
What a great career, and you've certainly worked with some of the best. That's what a nugget that you worked or that you were in camp with Tom Morton.
Yeah. So that's the heart of junior golf, right? So
yeah.
I really learned from the best, and you know, I truly believe that if you can get with a really good pro that shows enthusiasm in your children, those kids might not play college golf, but they'll play golf for a lifetime. And that's what's important. You know, there's a very small percentage that goes on to play college golf, and it's not doable. But if you could go to Hawaii on vacation with your family and play with your friends and your parents and your siblings and your kids or your fraternity brothers and sisters, that's what life's about. Golf is about connecting with people. And if you could start at a young age, they've got the feel of it, and they're going to do it for a lifetime.
What's the best part about working with kids?
Smiling. I love, you know, I truly love it. They inspire me. You know, I go to the club every day. I don't feel like it's work. I just want to spend time with people, and kids are great and they keep me young, and adults are great too. I have fun with it. Teaching adults just as well, and a lot of times I'm teaching them just like I'm teaching the kids. So it's if you keep it fun, they're going to do it for a long time, and that's what keeps them coming back.
You know, I'm the notion that kids can start at three and begin to play with regular golf balls and golf clubs is really remarkable to me. I got a late start in playing the game. Scott, how old were you when you started playing?
You know, Frank, I started really late. I was in my 20s, you know, like I didn't pick up a club when I was in high school at all. So you can see why my game suffers like it does. But Meredith, maybe that's a good point. Like, what would you, you know, you're working with kids and obviously you tend to pick up things earlier in life much better. But for somebody who's picking up their game maybe later in life, an adult, would you teach them differently, or what sort of things would you tell them versus somebody who's starting at an earlier age?
You know, most 20, 30 year olds that are just starting out are expecting to be, you know, that Tiger Woods that can hit it really, really far.
That was my expectation.
Exactly. I think just starting off with, once again, that shorter stuff and to getting them on the golf course. And once they figure out, you know, golf's hard. Golf's a hard game, and you have to do those steps and you have to work on it to get better. But it's also so fun. You hit that one shot and that's what's bringing you back. And that's kind of why I love Top Golf, right? For those millennials that are out here, they go out there, they get the hit it, swing, they get the feel of it, and now they're coming to the golf course because they want to take it to the next level. So that's another great thing for our area here, is to head over to Top Golf, try it out, and have some fun, and then see that PGA Pro.
You know, I'm a proponent of especially with new people, allowing them to do whatever they want. I'm, in my mind, if we're not playing in a tournament, if you want to tee it up in the middle of the fairway, you know, it doesn't strictly follow the rules of golf. But if it gets you excited about the game, I'm all for that. And so I guess that leads to the question: if I make you commissioner for the day, what rule are you going to change in the game to make it more inviting?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think tee it up anywhere.
Yeah.
I truly believe like you can have tournaments from 50 yards and for any age and see how low they can shoot. Like I've done that at the club and it's been a big success. And, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to do that. But when you say, hey, I went and shot 27 from 50 yards, can you beat me? Now there's a little challenge, and no matter if you're a single digit handicap or a 30 digit handicap, the playing field's even from there, right? And hit it and try to make it in the hole.
You know, at the risk of sounding like a fool here, if I'm not mistaken, I think the title is Program 36 or something to that effect. Isn't that how that works? You start at a really short yardage and work your way back as you continue to make those scores.
Yep, Operation 36, definitely. That's their model. And, you know, I've been involved with Operation 36 almost at like their second year out. And I'm a master recipient of that award, I guess. And it has changed golfers' perspectives, especially the youth and women. Women love it. They love going out there and being able to feel like they're succeeding out there. So now we got to get those young men out there doing the same thing.
Well, you know, as you talk, it might be a way of making people, all people, more comfortable with playing the correct tee. If you've learned to shoot a good score at a shorter distance, then, you know, maybe the need to move back so you can be big and strong isn't as great.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, if you play from, you know, 100 yards, even 100 yards, if you can score under par for 100 yards, your drives are becoming more important. It's like your second shot, right? So, and it doesn't always have to be right at 100 yards. You can move it 75, 95. But if you're really good from there in, if you can hit the green, two putt, every hole, I mean, that's all you have to do is add a drive and you're par in every hole.
So, Meredith, if people wanted to get in touch with you for lessons, whether they're a member or not, how do they go about doing that?
They can call the golf shop at Granite Bay, or you can reach me at on my email, which is ml4golf@gmail.com, or you can find me on social media.
You know, I knew what your email was, and until you just said that, it didn't occur to me that those were your initials.
My initials, yeah. Yeah. Luckily, when I got married, I kept the L, so I didn't have to change that.
A little late to the party, here I am.
Yep. Meredith, what's your social media handles?
Meredith Losey Loback on Facebook, and then ML4Golf@GBGC on Instagram.
ML4Golf GBCC. Got it. Okay.
GBGC. Very cool.
Yes. Yes. And isn't it amazing how the whole world of golf always comes around to the Mortons and Rob Frederick, Frank, everybody?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's what I said. You know, just the notion of working with some of the greats, and, you know, and I just have so much fun when I bump into them, you know, unexpectedly. And I bumped into Rob the other day at the NorCal Rep Show, and he's another one that always has a smile on his face. So there's something to be said for people who play the game, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Meredith Loback, PGA and LPGA Director of Instruction at Granite Bay. Thanks so much for being with us. This unfortunately wraps up another hour. You know, they go by so quick, Scott. I don't know.
They do.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. We will be back next week and hope you can join us. And in the meantime, play the game. It's a lot of fun, whether you keep it in the fairway or not. That next shot is always a challenge. Have some fun. Smile. Have a good time. Thanks for being with us.